I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Take your recording to the next level with Neural DSP and their unmatched range of guitar and bass amplifier plugins. And right now, you can get 30% off all Neural DSP plugins with discount code GUITARNERDS. Achieve an authentic and professional guitar tone at home without the need for mics or cabs. The Impulse Response Loader allows you to move mics around in a virtual 3D environment. And with a range of plugins that cover everything from crystal cleans and shimmering reverbs right across to crushingly aggressive metal tones, there's something for every type of player. But don't take my word for it, all Neural DSP plugins come with a free 14-day trial with no credit card required. Up your plugin game with Neural DSP and Guitar Nerds. Visit neuraldsp.com for more details. Hello and welcome to the Home Recording Guide Season 2. I'm your host, Joe Branton, joined by Matt Knight.
Hello there.
Yes, indeed. And in this series, we are attempting to make a track using easily accessible, largely affordable home equipment, and we're talking you through every step of the way. Of course, this is episode 3. There are 2 previous episodes. The first episode, we guide you through what equipment we think you need to make to make a track at home and make a good sounding track at home. And in the second episode, I'd provided Matt with a bit of a backing track, a simple synth line with a bass and some drums, a minute 30 track that sort of crescendos, and I asked Matt to write some guitar to it, and he provided me with that guitar, a couple of rhythm tracks and a lead track. And we talked about what we were going to do and how Matt had found the Neural DSP app, of course, because this podcast series is sponsored by Neural DSP. They are, of course, offering 30% off of all their plugins with discount code GuitarNerds. And me and Matt both had chosen to use the Neural DSP Corey Wong Archetype plugin, which is very good, mainly because it can do bass stuff as well as guitar stuff, and it has some fantastic effects. I don't find the auto whir especially useful, and if I'm honest, I prefer using compressors that have a bit more control over them, of which most DAWs provide. But everything else, and especially the reverbs and delays, we found very, very useful, very good mimics of Strymon-esque pedals. So really excellent for getting that kind of edge of breakup tone. It's the first time Neural DSP haven't been making something super metal. Like a lot of the other plugins haven't, especially been for me. Not that they're not fantastic. They seem to be the growing industry standard. You can always tell when someone like Rabia has presets on something, you know it's gonna be good for that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Because people are always like, oh, the clean sounds are easy. It's the metal sounds that are difficult. But I always find the metal or the heavier rock sounds difficult because I literally can't play like that. And I think there's a certain touch to all of that. And I think the right guitar for the right plugin in some ways, or the right sound that you're going for, which we discussed.
I completely agree.
In the last episode. Yeah. But yeah, it's impressive. Impressive, to say the least.
The Corey Wong is especially impressive, I think, just because Actually, when you look at plugins, everywhere you look, there's a metal amp plugin. Every, you know, go on, do a Google search of like amp plugins. They're all diesel copies, you know. It's always Mesa Boogie copies, and it's
Trek Plate One.
Yeah, exactly. And I am really not a fan of those sort of tones. They're absolutely not for me. What I want is an edge of breakup organic sounding amplifier. And actually, for a plugin, that's a really tough job to do, and it's something that your DSP certainly haven't attempted until the Corey Wong plugin, but it is fantastic. And the thing is, as with all Neural DSP plugins, it's incredibly controllable. I think having that secondary EQ head, I can't remember what it is, 9-band 10-band, something like that.
I need to dive into stuff like that a bit more. It's like when you're talking about compressors and you're talking about these like big studio compressors, and I'm just like, when you take the guitarist approach, you're like, I'll turn the knobs to maximum and see what happens. and then everything sounds terrible, and then you don't really know where to dial it back or whatever. And EQ, I think, little and often with the EQ, just dragging up little bits. Or I think one good tip that I've used on EQ pedals before is max out or dip one particular band so you can see what it's affecting, and then just up in tiny increments.
That's a great way of kind of learning where your sound sits, and I think we'll kind of go into EQing a little bit later in this podcast as well, but I really recommend that method. I think it's fantastic. Carry on.
I was gonna say, so this episode is really about me asking you a lot of questions about how you took the two or three tracks that I sent you and you know, started to turn it into something I think is actually quite wonderful.
We've called this episode Fleshing Out the Track. That's kind of what we're aiming to do with this episode. Talk about how we're going to add to it to make it more than just a, you know, a bass and drums with a guitar on top. And yes, because I have, you know, in a couple of minutes, dear listener, we'll play the track as I've worked on it and I've shown this to Matt. There is more to do at this point. There's always more to do, but I'll show you the ideas that I have now added on top of Matt's track. But the Corey Wong plugin, as I think we both found, was massively useful. I find it incredibly versatile. You know, like I said just now, I prefer the compressors that give you more control. But actually, I mean, there's one of the heads that you have in the Corey Wong suite is a DI. Mm-hmm. Style head, like a super crystal clear DI. It's the white fascia'd head. I don't know if you used it for anything.
I didn't. This was my first experience of, you know, and I've said on the podcast loads, like listening to stuff through monitors and, experiencing those sounds not through a guitar speaker and like shifting as much air as maybe a guitar speaker or an amp turned up would be. I would say I dipped my toe in the water in the sense that I was very cautious in what I was setting. And then I must admit, I kind of found a bit of a groove and then tried to, I sort of stuck to that, and maybe I could have ventured out a little bit more, but it was certainly... Yeah, and we touched on this last time, but actually playing back, what I didn't do at all was play back the track or loop sections of it and adjust the plugin in real time. I probably should have done a bit more of that so I could go, right, okay, well, here's the sound that I want. And I think that's something I'm going to ask you in a minute about, you know, how much you used of the original sound versus the sound on the track. But on the main podcast, obviously, we talked about reamping, and that was something that I certainly want to look into as well, because I'd really like to be able to use some of my own pedals as well. And I'm putting together a bit of a big sort of studio board now, inspired by actually trying to get some more stuff recorded at home. So that's something I certainly want to investigate as well, but actually still using the plugin for the amp stuff. And we talked on the main one about always recording a dry DI and then having an affected one as well, and being able to mix between those. And basically, I think, as JD said, just so that it's always there, you always know that you can kind of rely on it, and it gets you out of a bunch of jams if needs be.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I completely agree. And it's kind of exactly, we went into this in detail on the main podcast, but exactly why I'm getting so into using plugins for everything now rather than anything real world that I'll be, you know, I'll be held to later on in the mix. Actually, worth noting early on that, you know, I'm by no means an expert in this. I'm kind of feeling my way through all of this and having a fantastic time doing it. But the things you focus on end up being particular areas. And so I guess other areas end up undeveloped. And one of the things that was pointed out to me is last week I'd recommended, because you were talking about having some lagging issues, and I was like, oh, well, you can just export the stems to an audio track into a WAV or WAVE. And then, you know, have it fixed, and then it's using less of your CPU power, you know, to correct any of those issues. And it was pointed out to me that, of course, Studio One, as all DAWs, has a freeze, or in Studio One, it's known as transform function, where you can turn a MIDI track or a track that's running a plugin into an audio file temporarily, which will reduce the amount of CPU usage and hopefully allow your DAW to run a little bit more efficiently. It's not something that's ever been an issue for me, because I've got a pretty good MacBook, and it doesn't seem to matter how many things I run on it. It always works. So it's not something I've ever had to use, but I think that's a fantastic feature. So just you know, worth noting that my advice in the series isn't always right, but it does work. it does work.
I guess we should probably play them where you got up to, so we can then dive into a few questions.
Let's do that. Let's have a listen to what I've done. I won't explain anything about what I've done to you beforehand, listener. We'll listen to the track now and we'll talk about it after.
Morbius. A big machine, 8,000 cubic miles of Kleister relays, enough power for a whole population of creative geniuses, operated by remote control.
Okay, so there it is. So quite a bit changed, I guess. Some change since you last heard it, dear listener, and since you last heard it, Matt. I sent this through to you a couple of days ago, and actually I've worked on it a bit since then, because like I say, this is in a process at the moment, which I think will be refined. And there are things on this version of the track that you've heard that I already know I want to change and adjust.
Yeah, I'd like to start by saying, Joe, I don't know how big of a Pink Floyd fan you are, if at all, and that's fine, but the track, it starts off very, I'm going to go album specific rather than song specific.
Oh, let's see if you guess the one that I was listening to a lot of when I came up with this.
First half, Wish You Were Here.
Absolutely my number one favorite all-time Pink Floyd record, and I play it a lot. I listen to that record a lot.
And the last half is a little bit, because of the way that it's almost like a bit of a key change, and the lead line brings in this sort of, like, you know, this sort of happy part to it. Very end of Dark Side of the Moon.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
But yeah, very much like the kind of the pace and the feel is very much like kind of Welcome to the Machine.
Yeah.
And oh,
that, I mean, yeah, but probably my favourite Pink Floyd track.
Yeah. Where did you get the, what is the vocal sample at the beginning?
So, well, that's, let's start with that, shall we? We'll work our way through the things. So one thing that I think, dear listener, is it's not for everyone. By all means, you might think it's a bit too left field for you. But I love, obviously, I play in an instrumental band. I love field recordings.
Yeah.
Yes, I love field recordings, found sounds, things like that. And the great thing is, so much audio from old movies and things like that are in the public domain. So you can use them on tracks, and I actually have a hard drive of things like that that I've collected. So you can do things like search YouTube for public domain movies, or just, you know, search the internet for those. And I've searched that a lot, found old movies around subjects. This is how you have to, like, I've made records of field of just found sound and field recording. I'm very into it as a concept. So I have the hard drive is separated into subject matter of the spoken thing so that I can pick different themes. And one of the themes is sci-fi. So I went through and found loads of old sci-fi movies from the 50s, and I downloaded the audio for those public domain films, and I've stored them all, collected them up. I also commonly use a website called freesound.org, which I use for all my field recording bits and bobs. It's very, very... very useful. And actually, Fiverr is also a great site. It's not free, but it's a fantastic way to get field recordings and found sounds. For example, I was able to pay someone to walk through, on a previous Polymath record, to walk through the streets of Marrakesh towards the Blue Mosque during the prayer at the start of the day, so I could get the incredible sound, those incredible vocalists in this massive mosque with the call to prayer. Sort of getting closer and closer as the fella walked down the street with his little handy recorder. And I love things like that. And the thing about Freesound is you'll find everything on there, from the ambient sound of people in restaurants, which is of course very useful for getting hold of Pink Noise if you have a mix to Pink Noise, which I think is a useful thing to do. Do you know what that is, Matt? Should I explain that more?
Yeah, you've got Pink Noise is the more middly frequency one. Is that right?
It's the ambient sounds of life and stuff like that. So
yeah, you
know, I guess car doors, people in the street,
right,
birds,
okay.
Things like
I thought there was something to do with frequency range, because white noise is the terrible
probably
hissy.
Is. Yes, hissy. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Pink Noise is kind of handy to mix to. We also actually, I don't use it so much, but Chris Olsen, the sax player in my band, uses things like that, crowd noises, to put underneath guitar tracks and stuff like that to thicken it up and fatten it up. I can't talk too much in depth about that because I don't understand exactly what he's doing to make it sound better, but it always sounds better after he's had a bash at it. But I think, you know, we're straying into the, you know, things that are maybe a little bit too far for this, you know, everyone's first foray into
home
recording.
So I guess, so the way that I would start, so where do I start with this question for you, Joe? So obviously you received my guitar parts, and obviously you sent the backing track, so you must have already had some stuff in mind. What was the first thing that you do if you were going to do a bunch of these remote recordings, say that we're going to record a record now and you were going to kind of lead more of the production side of things, what was the first thing that you kind of dived into?
Okay, so I can take, that's actually a great way of doing it, because I'll come back to talking about sort of how I and why I used the field recording in the way that I did. I'll talk about it in the process that I went through. So the first thing is, we've got your guitars on there. They're all squashed right down the middle of the track. So the first thing we want to do is kind of pan them out. Great thing was you had two different rhythm parts. So perfect. That means I can pan one left and one right. Not hard left and right, but I can give them maybe 60% on each side, and it just gives a nice kind of stereo effect with the bass and the drums kind of coming more centrally, more down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of my first thing, to separate those rhythm guitars. Then I want to be able to EQ those rhythm guitars. So what I want to do is get them both on a bus So a bus is applying a master track to more than one track. So if you think the rhythm guitars are two separate tracks that you've recorded, but they're both doing the same job and I need them to sit in the in a similar place, so I want to EQ them the same. Any compression and EQ that I do on the track, I don't want one to be different to the other, especially not because I'm panning them quite a lot. I don't want one side to end up a bit more spiky than the other or anything like that. So I apply a track, a bus track, a master bus track to those rhythm guitars, and I can then EQ that.
Right, okay. So yeah, because I'd never really understood that was. So a bus is effectively
a master within a master. Think of it like that.
Yeah, so it's like
a master within a mix or whatever.
It's almost like, yeah, grouping a select set of tracks into one set of effects or EQs or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. Because, you know, it's, you don't have to. I could do it separately. You know, I could just pull the effect over onto the other guitar track and just have them running separately. It's just, I guess, almost in many ways more a CPU running feature than anything else.
Yeah, I'm guessing it might stem from back in the day, where maybe there just wasn't as much outboard, or if you're mixing, you know, I've started to watch a few videos of people. I found this one guy, I can't remember his name, but he like mixes tracks live. So he was playing like Don't Stop Me Now by Queen and then was like running all the master tracks or the stems through his analog console and like mixing it in real time. And I guess, yeah, you have buses to kind of go, yeah, like you say, apply the same effect to multiple type of, I guess maybe you would use it for drums. I don't know. I guess you know, people might
bust, yeah,
drums quite a lot and stuff for that. But that's interesting. So yeah, the first thing is kind of giving the track, because that's the first thing I noticed. Or the second thing I noticed was actually the track had a lot more space. It feels a lot more airy. I don't know if that's the right term, but it you know, it feels like more like a band playing rather than a bunch of audio recordings on top of each other. Does that make sense?
I think you get that sort of thing when you just pan guitars out, to be honest, which is, I really enjoy doing that. But yeah, that was, I thought I just applied a little bit of post EQ to them, to be honest, not a lot. I gave them a little bit more spikiness in the mid frequencies. But like that was about it. There wasn't a lot, and I didn't mess too much with your sounds. I used your tones. Okay. I kind of, even though I'd said, hey, send me the, you know, the plain audio as well, I sort of felt like you'd made these choices, so I should try and stick to those as much as possible. Although whilst I say that, when we kind of move on to the lead guitars, I had a different idea, which is something, you know, we were going to talk about on this episode, extra things that I think you should do. So when I like listened to the lead track, I was like, cool, this is great. A thing that I like doing with lead tracks is actually a similar thing to the rhythm tracks, but I've only got one lead track in this case, so I duplicate that track, I pan them both to left and right, and I apply some slightly different effects to one side than the other, just to give it a bit more of a round sound, I guess. It's not something that you have to do, but I quite like that. It sort of fills out those frequencies a bit more. And one thing I did is on the left side, I had a nice Persona Studio One has their Ampire, their own sort of amp plugins separate from Neural DSP, because the Cory Wong stuff was great, but of course there's no modulation on the Cory Wong plugins.
Yeah.
So I had quite a nice version of an old Boss. What's the kidney bean chorus?
C1.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so I had quite a nice version of those. So I applied a little bit to that, which you thought was a bit too thick. You thought I'd come on a bit too strong with the chorus.
I think maybe for me it was kind of, I think you actually, it was nice you said, oh, you know, I'd made those decisions, so you kind of stuck with it. So it's weird hearing, because I'd never use chorus for a lead track, especially that lead track that was a little cleaner. And I guess I use it more on rhythm stuff, so it's quite interesting. Oh, it's just interesting, you know, how we obviously have sort of varying opinions on that. But I preferred the, again, harnessing my inner David Gilmour, was harnessing more of the kind of classic sort of compressed another brick in the wall kind of solo thing.
Yeah.
And I think it was interesting how you put that on, because that's something I wouldn't have thought of doing. And it's not necessarily something that I'd go, hey, I'm sad with that. I think it would have been better, maybe a bit more subtle.
I agree. I actually think that's a kind of a great method, you know, or certainly I guess it's the method that I tend to use, is whenever I make decisions, I'll make them decisively and strong, and then I can roll back from that point until it's set in the right place.
Yeah.
And much that chorus was early stages, I think. I definitely agree with you. It needs to come down a little bit.
Yeah.
It's doing the job of thickening, but it's too much.
I think one thing that's interesting, listening back to it, so people would have, you know, listened to the other episode. So I recorded effectively two rhythm parts, but I would say that they weren't like a, you know, eighth note kind of rhythm strummy pattern. You know, they were kind of, I started off recording one part and then I was like, I'll double track it. And then I was like, oh, but there's bits that I'm missing, but bits that only two guitars would interact with each other, not that you would play in one line. And then I obviously added a lead line, which was a mixture of lead, but also some, you know, octave parts and stuff.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And, yeah, there's kind of no real double tracking there. The guitars are all doing very different things.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I thought that was quite interesting how you'd made it sound almost like, it did almost sound like one guitar player was doing everything, but there was, what you'd done was pulled out some really distinct points that I played in like a lead line, like a little descending run and stuff like that. And then you'd thickened the track up with, you know, a synth to match or things like that as well. So did you change any other parts to match my guitar part, for example?
So it wasn't as much changing parts as adding. So I listened for things, especially on kind of the lead line, where there was some continuity to it, where it's not just like a bent note or a noodling, where you're doing a little run, a little progression of notes. Mm-hmm. And I went through and found those, and then I played those in on a synthesizer underneath what you were doing, just to thicken up those runs as almost taking over from the root notes that the bass and that root synthesizer are providing, so that you're sort of leading the track a little bit more, which I kind of we'll come back to guitars in a second, I guess, as we're, you know, sort of talking about synthesizers for this. So I used a complete control. Is it an M32? Now the M32 is the Native Instruments Mini Keys 32 key little thing. So it's tiny. It's £100. That, you know, that's it. It's a MIDI keyboard that comes with a huge load of the complete control pack. Now, listener, if you're not aware, Native Instruments Complete Control, their flagship versions of the Complete Control keyboards, are considered industry leading. Whilst they obviously require a computer to function, they are it's a controller keyboard. They come with their own software package, which is very, very highly respected, and you will see on live stages all over the world. And the premium package is expensive. It's £1,000 unit, but they've recently introduced it into these budget. So you don't get all the sounds, but you get a decent whack, and they're mini keys, so they're not sort of weighted. Because of course, a lot of people use Complete Control for maybe like live piano or anything like that, just because the tones you get are so good. So this is definitely simpler and more basic, but it's £100 and the amount of tones you get are unbelievable, let alone the fact that you can use all the synthesizers that you get for free with Presonus when you download even their free version. So you've got access to all of those and a MIDI controller to match. And of course, if you're not very good at playing keys, you can, of course, use the Studio One MIDI sort of mapper function thing in order to write your notes in, and you can still access all of the Complete Control sounds, which are very useful. So I played through with a rough sound, and if for those bits, the first thing I did was I went through and I went, right, where are the runs, what are those runs, I'll play along. And after I did that, I went listened back through the track and I was like, where is there space? Where is Matt not doing a lot? And where I found that was kind of early on in the track. We had the track establishes itself. We've got the swell at the start, the first couple of notes, you know, a little lead bit, but then kind of there's not a lot of lead going on, and there's quite a lot of space in your chordal choice for the first 30 seconds or so. So I was like, well, this could probably use a lead line, you know, I'm thinking a guitar versus synth lead line. So I played in this little lead line I just played it in. That's the first take. I didn't change anything. My timing wasn't 100%, so I corrected that in post using the MIDI functionality. But yeah, I was able to, so I have that planned in. I've got a little lead line now. I've got those root lines as well, but I've got just one of them. So now, because I've used a MIDI controller, I'm able to duplicate these tracks and apply completely different synthesizers to all of them. So the first thing I did was with that lead line at the start, I duplicated that three times. I sent a cello to hard left, I sent a Mellotron style synth to hard right, and then I sent a more sweeping synthesizer, which I found in the Presonus Voodoo 1 samples, like something that had like an organic kind of cutoff sweep within it. I sent that down the middle just to flesh out that section. And I realized that kind of towards the end of it, I was like, I'm a bit bored. I kind of wish I'd used the mod wheel. And of course, you can use automations with any MIDI products on Studio One or any DAW, which is where I can basically plan in an automation, and I can so you can select sort of automation, and it will ask, what do you want to automate? And I'm like, well, the mod wheel. I want to automate the mod wheel, and then I can play that back through and just control the mod wheel for it. So because towards the end, I just wanted to just go crazy on the vibrato. So I was able to do that after the fact, rather than having to replay the whole thing in again and use the mod wheel. But yeah, that was the first bit. I guess one thing I've decided with that is it's a little high pitched. I'm probably going to put it back in, and then I'm going to pull it down and pull the whole thing down an octave,
right?
Just to back it up a little bit. Yeah, 'cause it does feel a little bit high.
I think one thing I really enjoyed about the track, which is, you know, talking about all the things you've done there, was, you know, when you sent me the backing track, it, and you listen to it, you know, obviously very basic, but some defined, you know, the bass was defining the chord, you know, the kind of the root note. So I sort of, you know, followed that with a bit more of a flowing guitar part. And then what you've done is then pulled out the kind of little runs that almost build in a bit of melody and a bit of, I guess a bit of interest. I think if I hadn't have done something like that and then you layered it, it'd actually be quite flat. But then when I listened to the version you've done, you've kind of pulled out a few melodies that actually move the track along. Because when I sent you the guitar parts, I was like, yeah, they work, but, you know, and that's why I put those little movements in between chords, which is something I sort of always play around with at home, but, you know, I've never committed anything to tape. And yeah. I thought that was really great because, yeah, it just brought that, it brought a bit of character, I think, to the track. Like there was actually a melody, there was a purpose from start to finish.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's kind of the point. And I really like doing that, using synthesizers as textural instruments to support guitars in any recording. I like doing it sort of in Polymath after Tim's had a pass at something on a guitar, just listening back through and being like, is this part of the track too dull? Does it need a little lead line on a synthesizer just to give it some extra texture? Or does this guitar line need some support? Maybe not, you know, not obvious support, but just a little bit underneath just to thicken it up. Well, and that was kind of... Sorry, go on. I was just going to say that was the point with the other parts, those more bassy parts towards the end. I was thinking more about supporting the guitars. And again, in that case, there are three of those, one left, one right. In fact, they're ping-ponging. They're pinging left and right. And then there's one with a slightly different, more subby, simple bass tone going right down the middle.
I think it's great. It almost feels like we should be a band, Joe. So I just want to talk about drums, but before we do that, I have one more question about the track. You've made the intro very punchy. So I didn't really know what to do. And obviously the bass comes in, there's this 4-bar lead in, there's a little bit of a swell. You know, I was sort of like, oh, I don't really know what to do here. And I sort of added a bit of a harmonic, but you've somehow added like a definitive punch to the start of the track. Is that sort of just a bit of mixing? Is that a bit of EQ?
It is actually all those things. So I think the reason why it punches in a little bit more is there's not a lot of magic to this. It's quite simple. I put the bass up a couple of decibels from what I'd provided to you because it just needed a little bit more lift after the guitars were in there. And that really kind of made it drive in quite a lot. I compressed the bass a little bit more, so it's really very over compressed, the bass parts. Having the two guitars now, one of them with chorus, has really made it sort of, it really defines. So actually one of the things that is almost a problem that I would talk about in things that I'd want to change or add is because I'm dealing with two lead lines that are exactly the same, I feel when the track starts they're almost two in your face, and then towards the end they're getting very overtaken by the synthesizers because so much builds, but the lead guitars really stay in in one thing. So, you know, there are two options there. I can either use automations to pull your guitars down and bring them up towards the end, or and I would prefer you have a second pass at that lead line with everything in mind that's there now. That we could add to the existing lead line that would kind of consider, well, there's not much going on here, and well, there's a ton of stuff going on here, so I've got to dig in. And adding that sort of the dynamics that of course wouldn't have been there the first time you did this, because essentially you were guiding over a bass and a drum kit.
Right, yeah. No, that makes sense. And I think that would be quite a good thing to do. And I think now there's a bit more of a fuller track. I think a lead line, I could probably... Because there's a couple of lead parts that have got a definitive melody that actually like bring in certain parts. But what I said this in the last episode, what's great is just being able to like drop in. I was getting used to sort of dropping in at certain points and actually going, oh, I don't have to play from the beginning of the track and wait a minute for this part to come in. I can sort of just, you know, drop in, a couple of bars before and actually sort of, you know, almost fumble around for a bit and then ready for the intro. So, yeah, that's something I think I'll definitely give a go.
Yeah.
So before we kind of finish on, I guess, maybe, you know, what we want to do for next week, I just wanted to ask about drums, because it was something you posted the track in our sort of WhatsApp group with the other guitar nerds. And Mark was asking about drums, and it was something that I know we spoke before, because I just can't really program drums. But I know there's some things out there that are just like drag and drop drum loops and stuff like that. And it can do a lot of the hard work for you. So did you change the drum track at all? It sounded relatively similar, but I wondered what you did to the drums and sort of how you go about maybe doing some drum tracks.
So I've kept it pretty much the same. I'm not 100% happy with it at the moment. For example, the snare needs quite a lot more reverb, I think, than it's got now that we've definitely gone full Pink Floyd. Also, the cymbals, I need them to be like a little less overpowering, a little thinner. So I'll probably apply like a bit of Bit Crusher to the cymbals to sort of balance them out and just a touch of reverb to give them that kind of roomier feel. Drums are time consuming. But there are quick ways to do it, because you're absolutely right. Loops are an option. And in fact, Studio One comes with a very good selection of loops. And that is, in fact, where I got the idea for this. So within Studio One, you get acoustic drum loops. There's acoustic drum loops, acoustic drum pro, and then there are a couple of other packs, depending on which version of Studio One you have. And the great thing about these loops is it's not just here's a track. You drill down by genre, and then within genre there'll be kind of a few subsets of that genre, and so you open that, and then within that you'll have new folders separated into intro, verse, middle eight, crescendo, fills, and within those folders there'll be several different versions of each thing, plus individual fills and stuff like that. So you can really, even though they're loops, which simply means that you have less control, they're very, very good. So you can, because they all seamlessly work together, they're great for being able to be like, well, I'd like, you know, this little bit of an intro, but I really think because of what I'm doing here, I really need a fill. I need a little drum roll out of this intro into the next bit. And you'll be able to find those bits and pop them all together. And there was a really nice version in the kind of the pop rock folder that was in 6/8, and I was kind of looking for something that was in a different time signature, so I popped some of those basic bits down, and I used that as my initial guide. And then once I was happy and I was kind of inspired by those, because I'm not a drummer, so I find it difficult to just build a drum beat, I kind of need the inspiration, and that's what those loops provide for me. Now, listener, those loops would be fine. Only if you really want to drill down do you have to ever replace them. But I like having a little bit more control. So one of the things I have is the one of the mix-ready Get Good Drums packs that you can get off of getgooddrums.com. And they do loads and loads of different kits, which I have several, ranging from about $50 to $100. And there are loads of different kits that you can get there that will give you the individual pieces of the kit, so that you can build everything in specifically beat by beat. So I built something in inspired by the original drums, but of course, crucially, now I have each different drum on a different track, and then buses on that, so I can treat them all independently.
That's what I was going to say, because you know, when I was thinking about it, I was like, oh, it's just a loop, and then you're just dragging a loop on there. But actually, you can have it set out like a kit. It's a drum kit and a drum recording in every sense, apart from the fact that there wasn't a real drummer behind the kit playing that part in for that specific track.
Exactly. The only difference here is that it was recorded by someone else somewhere else. You know,
for with literally no context.
No,
in mind.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think it's amazing, and I think overall this is the start of something really good, and I certainly want to do a bit more of it, and actually do a bit more recording. Like I said, it'd be really good to revisit this and look at sort of reamping. It kind of sounds like you need to have like an interface with more than
two outputs
just for your speaker, and then I guess you route those outputs in the DAW. That'd be something I'd like to do, just because I'd like to be able to split the signal from the guitar, record it dry through the mixer into the interface, but then also route out into the pedal board, and then dial in the sounds through the pedal board as well, and capture a bit of
absolutely
capture both.
I think that's the ultimate way of doing it. That's the way you want it anyway, isn't it?
And I've got some like outboard gear. So, you know, I've got this Line 6 like Filter Pro like synth, and you know, I've got some cool old delay racks, and I've actually got, looking at it now, I've got this old Boss SE70 from the late 80s, early 90s, which has got a bunch of guitar amp models and stuff in it. It's got that sort of crazy, it's got a bunch of crazy sounds in it, but also a bunch of amp sounds. But being able to split the signal and then reamp through that at the same time might be quite cool. So you can actually capture some sounds and then, yeah, capture the dry audio at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, that's absolutely what you want.
So that was you kind of filling out the track and EQing and messing around with it, which has made a massive difference in my opinion. But it's funny because I, you know, I sent you those parts and I was like, oh, it's, you know, it sounds pretty good. And then you hear like the mix and you're like, oh, that's amazing. But I still know it's not finished. So, you know, even for me, you are someone fresher to it. It's kind of like this amazing present that you get to keep opening. And every time you open it, like it sounds way better. And I guess the novelty never wears off. I mean, you've done loads of recording and it must be great to hear, you know, all the polymath stuff that you write in rehearsal rooms being recorded and then come back mixed. And it must be a totally, almost a new experience to hear it mixed after you've just spent a week or whatever in the studio.
I mean, that is a double-edged sword, I will say. Like, there, we got so frustrated with the last record that we made that we had to put a date on it, because someone always had something that they wanted to try differently or change or thought maybe that wasn't quite perfect. And that is the biggest problem with mixing your own stuff, is you'll never be finished with it. And it got to the point where none of us could stand the tracks because we'd all spent so long on it. So we just eventually had to say, it doesn't matter if it's there now, this is as if it's committed to tape. We're not changing anything. So yes, I agree. I absolutely love, you know, the being able to change things as frequently as possible, but eventually it will drive you mad.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's the next steps then, Joe? What are we doing between now and next week?
So final touches. So I think there are a couple of things you could add on guitar. I'd love you to have another pass at that lead line, as tricky as that might be to remember what you played. I'd love you to have another bash at that, trying to add in a little bit more, a bit more of a dynamic. I also think we could, I talked about an acoustic guitar, but I think maybe a clean electric guitar strumming the chord structure could work. I'm not going to say that will work, but it'd be great if you could maybe do something on, you know, I don't know, something like the Harmony Juno on the bridge pickup with sort of open chords of the chord progression strummed underneath, to see if I can mix that in and find a place for it. But yeah, I think those two things are the main, like, that's what I think we should add guitar-wise. Synth-wise, I want to bring those big da-da-da synths down a touch. I think they overpower the lead line a little bit too much, but I also think that might be saved by another lead guitar being played in. And then I've done a little bit with some of the field recordings. I've added some automation to pan them around. So if you're wearing headphones, you're going to hear the spoken stuff sort of ping-ponging across. It just makes it a bit more interesting. Also, Studio One released a new analog delay, which allowed me to pitch delay frequencies down and degrade them as they go. So I added some of that to it, had a bit of fun with that.
Nice.
I'm basically going to be doing that. And also, we need to master the track. So next week is probably going to be a shorter episode because we'll listen to the finished product next week. And then I'll just talk to you and to everyone a little bit about some real basic mastering techniques, which I think will get your track sounding fantastic. Now, of course, all we're aiming to do is have a good home recording. You know, and I think the mastering, that little bit at the end, makes all the difference. And I don't think it's a massive amount of information to take on. Like, mastering is something that a lot of people will be like, ah, whatever, the track's done. I've finished playing my parts, so the track's done. And they were just, you know, we're not talking about releasing it to the world. I'm just saying we could neaten stuff up at the end a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I think I've got a few ideas of things I want to try. So are you going to just send me the WAV file then? So the whole thing mixed down rather than all the individual tracks. So I'll just play over the top of that. Or are you going to sort of send me the project. I guess maybe you could send me the project, although I don't want to mess with anything. I don't want to touch anything.
That's fine. You wouldn't necessarily be. Now, when doing things like this, sometimes it's handy for you to have the project because you might want to mute out a few things, Matt. You might want to mute out some of your other guitars. So it would be handier to be working from more than just the WAV file. But what I'll do is I'll send you both. I'll send you the mix down and I'll send you the complete project, which you can upload into Studio One yourself. Nice. And then we'll take it from there.
I guess we should also touch on WAV versus WAVE for everyone listening. I will hold my hand up and say, I don't think I've ever heard it pronounced WAVE.
No.
That's why I've always said WAV. I honestly, in some ways, it blew my mind. And I was like...
Do you think it's an American English thing? Listener, if you're English, do you say WAV? Because I'm sure we've always said WAV. I'm thinking this is another case of solder, or, you know, aluminium,
potato,
aluminum.
Potato. Well, exactly. It's interesting because you say it and I say it. So no one's ever corrected. No one's ever corrected me. But then, yeah, I mean, obviously I know that WAV is short for waveform, but then I'm just saying the extension.
Exactly. I guess
people are going to stop saying it's not GIF. It's definitely GIF. But interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. That's all the time we have on this episode. I hope it's been insightful and I haven't gone too geeky. I knew that I was going to kind of dip into things a little bit this week, but I hope you enjoyed the track and you've enjoyed learning a few things, dear listener. We'll be back next week with the fully mastered version of this track and we'll have a little bit of a discussion about what you can do to EQ your track to make it sound good. You can join us next week for the regular episode of Guitar Nerds on Wednesday, and then we'll be back again on Friday with the last episode in this season. Thanks very much for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Bye.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.